Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier. It's my pleasure to be here for the next 3 hours. Between 2 and 3, we'll have a council connection show. Well, actually, Michael runs that. Between 1 and 2, we have our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. Will be in to tell us what he's been up to. But it's my pleasure now to introduce to you Dr. Tony D'Souza. Now, we spoke to Tony a couple of years ago. We shouldn't have waited this long to talk to him. But welcome, Tony. Now, I should mention that Tony is a urologist, so we are going to be talking men's health. I do a lot on this program talking about ladies' health with cancer and breast cancer and all that. So it's great to have a guy to come along and talk about men's health. Now, if your husband's not home and you think he should have listened to this, the podcast will go up early next week. And if you've got any questions between now and 12:45, if you want to shoot them through, although there's nobody here to answer the phone, to be honest, we'd only be too happy to ask them. But first of all, welcome, Tony.
Thanks for having me back on, Alan.
Not a worry. It's been too long since we spoke to you, Tony.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's the same case with patients sometimes having a bit of a long break between seeing the doctors. So,
which isn't always good. Tony, when I spoke to you last time, now I know guys, and I'm probably as bad as anybody else, don't like making medical appointments. And I hate to talk about COVID, but we were just coming out of COVID when I last spoke to you, and the numbers of guys that were putting off having tests was, you said, were down. Have those numbers increased in the last couple of years, Tony?
Yeah, it's a really important thing. A lot of patients did avoid going to see the doctor during COVID, and whilst you can do some things over the phone or online, it's not quite the same as sitting face-to-face with your doctor and your patient. So the short answer is yes, we are seeing patients come back. Unfortunately, there was a bit of a lapse in people not getting their tests for a couple of years, and so we have seen some patients present with more advanced disease. So we're catching up on all that, and it's good to have people back sitting in front of us again.
Tony, one of the I actually put up on Facebook and a couple of other ways to let them know that I'd be talking to you today, and a couple of the guys have said to me, look, can you ask doctor why, I mean, a few years ago, the guys hated the finger test. That's about the only way I can call it. And there seems to be a move away from that. Is it because the PSAs have got better, or what? Can you just tell us why the move away from the finger test?
Yeah, sure. So, look, the GPs generally don't do the prostate examination because in a lot of cases they'll send the patients along to us. And we still do it where it's necessary. It still forms part of our evaluation and assessment of a patient. So we still do it in some cases. I guess the question is, why do we do it? So it can be useful in actually assessing how big someone's prostate is, but you can find that on ultrasound. But in some cases we can a patient, there's quite likely a chance of prostate cancer based on an examination. It is something that's a potential deterrent for patients going to see a doctor. We understand that. Prostate MRI really is much more accurate even than our examination these days. And so we're doing a lot more prostate MRIs for men. We've got good access to that in Australia. And that gives us a good indication as to whether or not there might be prostate cancer present before we take any further steps in investigation.
Tony, you said that it tells you whether the prostate is enlarged. If it's enlarged, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's cancer, does it?
That's a good point. So a lot of men that I see come along with problematic urinary symptoms, they go to the toilet too often, or they dribble, or they get up at night time to pass urine. That can be caused by an enlarged prostate as opposed to prostate cancer, which generally doesn't cause any symptoms. So sometimes it is those symptoms paradoxically that prompt a patient to come and seek medical advice, but usually they're not prostate cancer symptoms. You should still be checked out. But unfortunately or fortunately, prostate cancer doesn't cause any symptoms, particularly in the early stages, and that's why it is really important to still get that PSA blood test with your GP.
So, Tony, when we're saying that, it doesn't necessarily follow through that just because somebody is, how does a patient know, I guess, whether they have prostate cancer if it doesn't show up in any other way. If it's not necessarily showing up.
Yeah, there's a bit of a false sense of security amongst a lot of men that they feel fine, but you can have prostate cancer in the background. And unfortunately, by the time it actually causes symptoms, it can be too late. It can spread, and then you can't cure it in some cases, which we still see a few patients every year turn up and they've got prostate cancer that's already spread. So that's why PSA, the blood test, is a very easy test to go and ask your GP for the test. And that can detect prostate cancer at an early stage before it causes symptoms, and then we can treat it. It's also important to know as well, I guess, Alan, people are worried about the side effects from treatments. We actually don't treat all prostate cancers. In some cases, it's just a matter of monitoring. But it's important that if we do find a more aggressive cancer, we treat it. And our treatments are getting better and better all the time, so that the impact on quality of life is not as great.
Tony, is it true that some people will have prostate cancer and they'll die with it, not because of it?
The likelihood of getting prostate cancer in Australia is about 1 in 5 by the age of 85. So it's pretty common if you live long enough.
Yep.
A lot of men will get prostate cancer. Most men who get prostate cancer don't die from it, but that's looking across the board. That is mainly to do with low-grade prostate cancers. So what we're really interested in is men who've got a good life expectancy. So if you've got a life expectancy, say, more than 8 or 10 years, and you're in pretty good health, that if there was a prostate cancer there, there was an aggressive one, we want to know about it so that we could offer treatment before it, became too advanced.
Because one of the problems, when you say it gets advanced, you're talking about getting out, aren't you, out the prostate?
Correct.
That seems to be where the problems come in, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we want to pick up the aggressive prostate cancers early before they get a chance to spread. We're not so much interested in detecting the low-grade prostate cancers, but that's where MRI is helpful, because MRI usually only picks up the more aggressive prostate cancers. So what we're really aiming to do is to not over-investigate men, but to pick up the right patients at the right time. And the aim really is to minimise harm. We don't want to over-treat men who would have done just as well with no treatment. We want to avoid treating those men, and we just watch them. But we also want to pick up on the young men. And I've treated men in the last 12 months in their 40s with quite aggressive prostate cancers. And these might have been men who might have turned up 10 years later with metastatic incurable disease.
Now, I was just going to ask you that, Tony. Like, I was talking to somebody the other day with breast cancer for the ladies, obviously. They're starting to find some girls 19, 20, 21, 22 that are starting to get breast cancer, where it used to be more considered a disease for the older ladies. You're saying in the 40s, is prostate cancer starting to get down into the low 20s as well, or is that just not happening with guys?
So, there is some historical studies that show that some men can develop prostate cancer even in their 30s, but it'd be very unlikely to be a clinically significant type of thing. So there are some new PSA blood test guidelines and screening guidelines that are being devised at the moment, where generally we advise men to get a blood test at the age of 50. If there's a family history of prostate cancer, certainly there would be more of a push to get that done at the age of 40. And there's some suggestion even for healthy men with no family history of prostate cancer getting a test at 40, not because they've got cancer, but just to establish a baseline for how often they'll need tests moving forward.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing too, one of the things that I'd like you to tell the listeners about, with anybody, whether it be breast cancer for ladies or men, as soon as you hear the word cancer, I'm going to die. That's not quite the case with prostate cancer. And I know with the breast cancer for the ladies, they're telling me that the prognosis is a lot better, and people shouldn't automatically jump to that conclusion that they're going to die. Is that the same with prostate?
There's a lot of negative connotations with that C word. So we you know, we're very mindful of that. And I've, you know, discussions most days with men about their prostate cancers, and we have to be sensitive around that. But no, most men who get prostate cancer don't die from it. Even the aggressive prostate cancers, we have a lot of treatments these days, and there's a lot of research that goes into treatments for prostate cancer. So certainly it's not a death sentence by any measure. But yes, the word does sort of bring up negative connotations and a lot of anxiety. But there's also plenty of supports out there. Apart from doctors, there's prostate cancer nurses. Just as for breast cancer, there's breast cancer nurses. So there are a lot of supports out there as well.
Tony, you mentioned before the prostate. I've got to have to take a break in a minute. I've just got a couple of things I've got to take. You said that, you test out looking for the size of the prostate. Does the size have any relevance? Like, if it's big, does that automatically mean it's going to turn cancerous, or can it just get big and never go anywhere?
The size of the prostate's largely a genetic thing. There's no correlation between the size of the prostate and prostate cancer, but you can have an enlarged prostate and have prostate cancer in the background as well. But in general, large prostates more likely to cause the plumbing issues, the trouble passing urine and so on.
Tony, one more quick question before I have to go to this break. You're talking, we've mentioned a couple of times about guys getting up during the night. What's an unacceptable, like I was talking to a friend of mine a little while ago, and he gets up about 12 times a night. Well, so that's totally unacceptable. What is acceptable? Because I don't think any guys, once they get after about 50, go right through the night, do they?
Yeah, that's one of the most annoying symptoms, and it's one of the hardest things to treat because it's not just necessarily related to the prostate. That might take a little while. We could certainly go through that in a bit more detail if you have time. Maybe after you whatever you need to.
Well, so I'll take this quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll tease that out.
Sounds good.
Sounds good, thanks.
Oh,
I'm talking to Dr. Tony D'Souza. He's a urologist, and we're talking about men's health. Tony, or should I say Dr. Tony, before we went to that break, I did ask you how often a night people getting up would you think is acceptable? We'll talk after they turn 50.
I guess we cut it short a little bit because that's one of the common things that I have discussions with patients about. It's one of the most annoying things. I guess there's not really a normal amount. I mean, ideally, you wouldn't get up at all to pass urine at night time. It's very rare that it's actually a sort of sinister underlying cause, but anything more than once or twice really can interrupt with people's quality of life and their partner as well. And it can be for men and women. As men and women get older, the body's ability to regulate fluid balance changes, and usually your body shouldn't put out too much urine at night time, but then as you get older, the fluid can come out at night and that results in getting up to pass urine. In some cases, it can signify underlying prostate enlargement or infection. In some cases, it can be a marker of other medical illness. So the general advice that I give to patients is to try and cut down on things that irritate the bladder. I think a lot of people don't really consider what they drink and when they drink it and how that can contribute.
That was going to be my next question.
Sorry, I preempted it. Coffee obviously has a lot of caffeine, but some people, you know, drinking several coffees a day, cups of tea, caffeinated soft drinks and so on, it really adds up, as well as, you know, the one or two beers or glass of wine at night time, they'll impact on the amount of urine that is put out. So the general advice I give to patients is try and get your fluids in earlier during the day, try and cut out any caffeine after midday, and try and cut out all fluids after, say, dinner time, and that might help to a degree. The other thing is some people get a bit of build-up of fluid in the ankles at the end of the day, just from being on your feet, just from gravity, or in some cases from medical conditions. So the other thing I told people to do is to put your feet up on a settee or recliner before you get to bed, just to try and get a bit of that fluid off. It might not fix it, but it might help a bit.
Yeah, because I remember talking to my own doctor once, and he was saying, I said, I seem to get up about 1 o'clock. And he said, yeah, but I've told you 100 times, stop having your cup of tea at 9:30 at night and expecting to go through the night. So what you just said is what you should be, like, you shouldn't be doing that, should you, and then complain if you've got to get up once during the night.
Well, it's you've got to have some enjoyment. If you like having a glass of wine or your beer in the evening or your cup of tea, well, just do it knowing that you may have to get up and have a pee later. And if you can get back to sleep early, if you can get back to sleep, okay, that might not be a problem. But
Tony, could I just ask you? This is your field, of course. Out of the men that are tested with PSA, what sort of percent, do you have any idea what percentage of the population do get tested?
I don't know the numbers of people who are getting tested. I'd say it's more often than not men are getting a test these days. I don't know the numbers of who is getting, but there are a few barriers to that, whether it's concern about what the results might be, keeping your head in the sand sort of thing, or in some cases men are discouraged from actually getting a test. There is a train of thought from some general practitioners that PSA testing can cause more harm. We're really trying to change that, because in the past we know that probably men were over-treated for low-grade prostate cancers, but these days we're much more judicious about who gets treated. So there really shouldn't be harm doing the tests.
Tony, I don't know how to put this delicately, but I was talking to somebody during the week, because I brag when I've got somebody like you coming on the show, and he said, well, I'm never going to get tested. And I said, why not? He said, because if they find something, the treatment could take my manhood away, and I'm not ready to give that up. How do you counteract an argument like that? Because it doesn't necessarily mean the treatment would do that, or does it?
It's absolutely an understandable concern. So the first thing we do is say, well, does someone need treatment or not? And then we want to make sure that any treatment we do is you know, more beneficial than the risk of the side effects and so on there. If your argument is that you don't want to have treatment because it might affect your, you know, your sexual function, your manliness, but the other alternative is to, you know, end up with an aggressive or metastatic incurable prostate cancer and die from that, I'd argue that that's a worse outcome. The good thing is that, yes, as you point out, our treatments are getting better and better, so the impact on sexual function and these other important things are less and less, and we have very good treatments for those things. You know, whether that be medications, tablets, injections, even surgery, we have lots of good treatments. So even if there are side effects, we have lots of options to counter those.
So don't use that as your argument to not be tested.
It's an understandable concern, but I think the benefit of testing is certainly outweighs those other things.
I remember my doctor saying to me, this is years ago, when I probably pushed back a bit on the finger test, and he said, Alan, you'll never die of embarrassment, but you could die of cancer. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, no, it's a fair enough comment. The finger test is still important in some cases as well. So, and we're not going to be embarrassed about it. That's what we do, and I think more and more men are getting a bit more comfortable talking with their mates at the pub or at the footy club or bowls club about these things, which is great. And there's certainly plenty of support groups out there where men can find some friends who've been through it all and can attest that it's better to get checked.
Sometimes that's the best. I mean, to be honest, I'll be very honest here, that it was only a couple of other guys who were customers of mine that told me I should get it, that I should get that test. And I think they were doing that because they were having it and they wanted to make sure all the other guys were just as embarrassed. But there are two things here that I want to ask you about. How big an influence is mates, which you just mentioned, and also their partner? So, because I always believe that with the guys, I've got three daughters and a son, but that's he's not in this equation. I've got three daughters and a wife, and I always used to say to them, look, it's none of my business, but are you getting your the breast test? Don't tell me, but just make sure you are. So how important is it, the partner of the guy, to say to him, hey, I was just listening to Dr. Tony today and Alan on the thing, and I think you should go and get yourself tested. How important do you think that is?
Sometimes a little bit of gentle nagging is a good thing. But no, definitely the mateship and the partners are really important, and just normalising all these things, that it's not something to do, it's not something to be embarrassed about or scared about, that everybody's doing it. So you just get it ticked off. And, you know, we've seen important public health campaigns from people like Shane Warne,
yep,
to get the heart checked. And those things have been really, really well received. Perhaps the memory of people like Teddy Whittens is getting a little bit old now, that those things need to be revisited. But, you know, he did a lot for increasing awareness for men for all these different health issues.
Tony,
so it's not just prostate cancer.
Yeah, I just don't want to keep harping on the finger test, but I think it, like I couldn't imagine my father having that. Is it, as we get, the different generations, are we becoming more accustomed to these sorts of tests rather than, say, back in my grandfather's day or my father's day?
Yeah, look, I think more and more men are accepting of, you know, the importance of doing these things, and the taboo's not so much there as it was in the past. But as I said, it's definitely not something to shirk at, and that, you know, we are often replacing some of these more invasive things with non-invasive things like prostate MRI scans, which give us a lot of information as well. So definitely not a reason or an excuse not to get checked.
Tony, could you see in the future where 80-90% of guys will get tested?
I'd like to think so. And part of that's just, you know, this providing a bit more education and public awareness about things, that there is good evidence that doing PSA prostate tests saves lives. It doesn't necessarily amount to having to undergo treatment in most cases. So we'd like to see everybody getting tested. And there's always going to be a percentage of the population who won't get the PSA test, but they might be the same people who don't get their heart checked or don't get their cholesterol checked or any other things. And, you know, everyone ultimately makes their own decision about their own health. But we just try and encourage patients and try and make it as easy as possible.
Doctor, do you ever come across doctors who just don't want to be bothered with a PSA test? Is there any reluctance in the medical industry? I don't want you to have a go at them. I'm not asking you to turn against the medical. But do you find that there is ever any doctors that say, oh, no, don't bother about that? Or is just doctors a lot more turned on than that?
I think why the large, you know, GPs have, you know, their patients' best interests at heart. And I think they probably have seen over the years, as I said, men being overtreated unnecessarily for prostate cancer. And we've made a lot of efforts to change that. And so it's not really the testing that's the problem. It's how you manage the cancer afterwards. And we're, as I mentioned, much more judicious about who we treat and who we're comfortable just to watch. And on the horizon, we are looking at some more investigational or emerging treatments that potentially don't involve having to have the prostate removed. So
I was just going to ask you that. You've just preempted what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you, can you? What's going to happen in the future?
Well, what you're talking about there, Alan, is something called focal therapy, which basically involves just treating the area of cancer. Now, that's still in or under research. It's certainly not something that's going to be suitable for everybody, and it's not going to be suitable for someone who's got a really aggressive prostate cancer. But there's some men who we're just a little bit uncomfortable about watching, but by the same token, we're sort of thinking maybe removing the prostate is a bit too aggressive. So there may be a role moving forward. It's not something that's in mainstream use yet. It's certainly not supported by Medicare yet. But watch this space, that's something that's coming.
Terrific. Look, Tony, unfortunately, I've got to move on. But, look, I really appreciate your time again. I know you're a busy man, but I think at times that guys do put these things off, and that's why I'm really encouraging any of the ladies are listening. Get your husband to listen to the podcast. It'll be up early next week, and encourage him to go and get a test. So I thank you for your time, Tony, and I wish you well. And I'd love to say one day there'll be no need for a guy like you, but that's not going to happen, is it?
No, I might be taken over by AI too soon, hopefully. But no, part of my job as a urologist is education, so I'm very happy to answer any questions that come up.
Fantastic. Well, for the listeners, we will have Tony back towards the end of the year, so if you've got any questions you want answered, shoot them to me over the next 3 or 4 months, and I'll make a list, and we'll get Tony back, and we'll find out a bit more. Thank you, Tony, for your time, and I wish you well.
All the best. Thanks, Alan.
Bye.